What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And we welcome you to the first August edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. This is Alan Medlock with me at Red Dirt Redbird. I'm never going to get it. It's just going to take a while. And A Medlock 1 on Twitter. And, this week we can at least catch our breath. If you listened to last week's show, you knew we were scrambling around trying to figure all these pitching moves out that the Cardinals made. Made some more moves this week, but thankfully those were earlier in the week, and we've had a little time to break that down. The trading deadline was Tuesday, and the Cardinals only made two trades on that day, neither of which were expected by pretty much anybody. And, you know, you could argue how much they were made for, well, one maybe. You could argue about this, and one was definitely for the future. Let's get the other one out of the way first, because we're not going to have a lot to talk about. Oscar Mercado goes to the Indians for two prospects that are a little further away from the major leagues. Alan, that just looked like a little bit of roster cleanup and trying to spread out some talent more than having everything ready and knocking on the door.
Yeah, it seemed like that was more of a 40-man move than anything. I knew that I've got a really good friend who follows the Indians quite a bit, and he was, you know, they were publicly, you know, what we could read that they were looking for an outfielder, and I know that whatever they wanted to do, they wanted it to be either a salary dump or not return much. So this one kind of made a little bit of sense. I'm sure that they probably tried to move Pham. That would have been a direction they tried to go, and maybe another outfielder. I don't know. Maybe an Ozuna. Or why not? Things look a little different now since they're playing well, that they're kind of glad they held on to these guys, and I think there's some belief that they're going to be into this just due to the head-to-head games. But back to the Mercado deal, I think that the Indians wanted someone close and defensive, works well. And then the Cardinal sense, I think they're going to need that 40-man spot because he would have been a decision come around December anyway. So made sense. I always liked his story though, as kind of being the failed shortstop to come up and probably be their best defensive outfielder in the system. I would have liked to have seen him play a little bit more than just what we did in the fall league.
You look at this and it's again, it's part of the idea that Jumbo Zalock seems to hoard outfielders. Mm-hmm. You've looked at, well, we've had enough trouble getting Harrison Bader and Tyler O'Neill into this mix. You know, then you look at Mercado, who, like you said, was on the 40-man roster, who was going to, you know, possibly be some issues there this winter. You look at, you know, Jag, who is not on the 40-man, but is playing well enough that he could, you know, be in that mix. Randy Rosarena, you've got, you know, a whole bunch of different parts and outfielders, and, you know, they can't all play in St. Louis at the same time. And if this gives you two quality prospects, it sounds like the guy that they got back, is it Capel, I believe, that's playing it. I think he went to Springfield. Is a pretty good possibility. The teenager they got back is probably a higher ceiling guy, but you know, he's also in like the Gulf Coast League, so you never know how that's going to pan out. But it does, it spreads that out, because you don't want that hole. You want to have all constant depth coming through. And you turn it 2-for-1. And you're right. Hopefully Mercado gets a chance to play with the Indians pretty soon. We'll see how he does, because he's, you know, he has had two very good years in the minor leagues. There was a little bit, you know, for me, there was a little bit of that idea, especially last year, that he kind of came out and was like, is he going to be able to sustain this? Is this really what he's done, because, you know, when he was a shortstop, he wasn't hitting like this. But, you know, he kept it up this year, and he definitely, I think he would have, I mean, he would have been on the, in the, made his debut, I think, with the Cardinals in September when the rosters expanded, because he was already on the 40-man. But I think that it does. It seemed to be a win-win for both sides on that. We'll see how those players pan out, of course, but that seems to be the way it is. Of course, that trade was that trade was made late in the day. In fact, we didn't find out about it till after the trade deadline, or a few minutes after, which made it kind of seem strange. But the big trade was, of course, sending Tommy Pham to Tampa Bay for three prospects, another outfielder. It's funny, the Cardinals, you know, as somebody pointed out, they cleared up their outfield by sending off two outfielders and bringing back three, which is true, but spaced out pretty well. They're bringing back an outfielder in Justin Williams, who, again, I guess it kind of feels like he may need an adjustment. And obviously, if you want to know about these guys, you go talk to Kyle, you go talk to Colin, you go watch them. I'm sure they'll have a prospects to be named later out pretty soon that'll cover a lot of this. Colin wrote a piece over at the Conclave about the fan prospects, especially, that you can go check out. But, you know, Williams sounds fine. It sounds like, the double A pitcher, which apparently looks like Genesis. It must be Genesis, according to Kyle's prospect after dark last night. Cabrera is kind of the steal of the thing, a left-handed starter that's got some good stuff. And then there's a third reliever that's a little bit farther down that kind of sounds like that throw him in and see what happens type of thing. But, you know, it's Tommy Pham going out of here, and that was a little surprising, I think. Overall, we talked a lot about, you know, Jose Martinez and maybe Bet Norris, but I don't think we really saw Tommy Pham going in a deal right now.
I don't know. When you look at it, it makes a little bit of sense, but that's obviously wasn't the name that a lot of it, that almost anyone thought, just because there was, it seems that there's not really a roster fit for Martinez. But it felt like they had to move one of the outfielders, regardless. And then I don't know about the return too much, but it was surprising, then it wasn't. When it broke in the morning, I was like, that's going to be their big move, because at that point I didn't think they were going to. But they have to. You knew that O'Neill was going to play at some point. Mm-hmm. So they kind of forced their hand to do it. And it does, you know, let's put it this way. He had a great year last year and a good year before, but this is probably three of the worst years that we've seen out of the Mosaic Cardinals. So, you know, that, I don't know. It made a little more sense than I think it's getting, you know, across baseball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it made sense. It just wasn't something we actually expected them to do when the day started. Because you look at it, and you're right. They want to get Bader. They want to get O'Neill into this thing. But you can't juggle five into three very well. I mean, nobody can. Especially when you've kind of promised Dexter Fowler playing time to try to get right, to try to get, you know, consistent time. And Marcelo Zuna is a guy you've got for, you know, this year and someone next, and he's your big thumper guy. He's going to play most of the time. Yeah, you know, you could argue maybe he could sit a couple times, but for the most part, he's going to play. Dexter's going to play. So to get these guys in the lineup, you pretty much had to move Pham. Now, you know, I think you and I talked about, I know I talked about some last year, the idea of trading Pham last offseason. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, coming off this career year, and you have all these outfielders, and maybe you could get a really good return for him because he's cheap and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, maybe there would have been some backlash about doing that, but it could have been a really smart idea. But, you know, moving him now, you know, I know people wanted to say it had to do with the Sports Illustrated article, and I don't think so. I think they'd have done it a long time ago if that had to do with that. I think, you know, of course, I'm sure relationships to the front office didn't help any, but, you know, like you said, he just wasn't hitting like he did last year, and you can really make the argument that last year was a fluke year, that he's going to be, I don't know that you'd say he's going to be this hitter, the one that we've heard seen this year, but not closer to this than last year, especially with his injuries, especially with his eye problems, especially with all these other things. I mean, you can argue that. Now, you can make the just as good of a case that he, you know, he's in a, you know, he could get adjusted and just tear it up, and we're going to regret not having Tommy Pham as a Cardinal. But, you know, when it came down to having to move somebody, I think this made sense, and to get something back for him. It's difficult to, you know, the Cardinals have always had trouble trading with the Rays. You know, of course, they kind of look at things the same, according to Derek Gould, at least. So for them to get this, it worked out. Now, it's kind of funny that, you know, the Rays then went out and got another outfielder from Pittsburgh later on. So we'll see how Pham's playing time works, I guess, down in Tampa Bay. But, you know, I don't think I can fault the organization for this. You'd like to think that there's more of a return, that you could get some sort of quality, you know, quality back. It looks like the prospects are probably pretty good, but I think a lot of us were hoping for something for the major league roster, and that just didn't happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's when we heard the term baseball trades. That's I think everybody assumed that it was going to be a deal from a pure swap. Trade one of your outfielders and possibly grab a corner bat of some point. That was close. So that was a little bit surprising in the return. Whenever I saw that he had been dealt and we hadn't heard of the return yet, I was thinking that something along those lines would happen. But then you see the outfielders and then the two pitchers, and you're thinking, wow, that's bizarre. And I just didn't know much about them. But yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that they were going to get somebody that was a little more seasoned, you know, more of the guy that's going to go directly to Memphis and be ready to, you know, make his debut within the next year. So I kind of thought. So it kind of surprised me a little bit on that as well.
Yeah. And we look at, we get past this trading deadline, and, you know, last week we were talking about it, and we said Jose Martinez is going and Bud Norris is probably going, and actually, kind of the other way around. It's just almost guaranteed that Bud Norris was going, and Jose Martinez felt like he was pretty close to the same. Both of these guys still on the roster. On one hand, you could make the argument that they should have done anything they could to get rid of those guys, just because, not because they're bad players, but they have higher value than some. They have, you know, a redundancy on this roster somewhat, which the redundancies on this roster are a lot less than they used to be, but
sure.
You can make that argument. But there's also the argument, and I'm pretty sure this is what at least John Mozeliak would say, is if you're not going to get something for those guys, there's no reason to give them away. And I think that's the case. I don't know that we saw a reliever go for just a huge bundle of prospects, and, you know, once, you know, Norris is good. But I don't know that the demand, you know, the market was out there to get much more than some middling prospect. And that's, I think they decided they could have a better chance to win than to just give him away like that.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And I mean, I liked his answer. He was like, we didn't trade him because he's our closer. I mean, it probably a little bit of company line involved in that, but that's one of those, we've talked about this one here, where, yeah, it could have been Hicks just to step in, and it may not have made ultimately that much difference before it's all said and done. But, you know, you don't want to give games away late. You know, even in a development situation, that's one of the first things you look at to not do. So, I don't know. I'm glad that they just didn't, you know, give them away for, unfortunately, say this is what they gave away, Pham. You know, so, so I was glad they kept them. I mean, it makes you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we're glad that Jose Martinez is still here after his base hit yesterday that won a game late. You know, and if Jose Martinez said he was good with staying, he wants to stay in St. Louis. Both of them wanted to stay in St. Louis, which probably factored in somewhat. But as long as Jose Martinez is comfortable with pinch hitting and starting, you know, once or twice a week, you know, that's fine. I mean, as long as he can continue to hit and do in that situation, I guess there's no reason to not keep him. You know, he's just got to be comfortable with that. And he seems to be. It seems like he's, you know, and I guess a guy that spent 10 plus years in the minor leagues trying to get to the big leagues is probably not going to be just ridiculously demanding about his playing time, you know. But, you know, if he's comfortable with that, I mean, he's a great bat to have off the bench. And if nobody's, you know, again, if nobody's going to offer you, you know, even one top prospect or something that you really think you need, then, you know, why move him?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Martinez, who you can move in the offseason.
Sure. And, I mean, yeah, he has been their second best hitter all year. You know, so, I mean, if you feel like you can make a run, it makes sense.
Yeah. And that may bring us to, you know, whether they can make a run. The Cardinals, since we spoke last, you know, they beat the Cubs 2 out of 3. Then they came and had two, you know, won 3 out of 4 against the Rockies, including 2 come from behind wins. One, you know, obviously that last one was more dramatic, but, you know, they were down 4-0 in that first game against the Rockies and battled back and won. This team feels, and I think we've talked about this a little bit even in the last couple shows, but it's worth reiterating, this team really feels different, and it's almost like it's starting to, you know, catch that, you know, whatever Mike Shildt is doing, you know, it takes a while to turn stuff around, but it starts to feel like it really is turning around. Alan?
You there?
Yep.
Yeah, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you faded out there for a second.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. There's several games, and I went back to the timeline here, but I probably can't look them up. There's at least 2, 3, maybe 4 games that I can think of that they would have lost a month ago. You know, one of those situations where they didn't battle back. Like yesterday was one of those to where, you know, we'd seen come from behind wins before and all kinds of stuff, but they kind of seemed left for dead yesterday to come back and win, especially in that fashion. So, you know, it's still 4 out, which is very attainable, especially since they have all the head-to-heads. I thought Rusty did a good job of that today, and you and I had talked about that about a month ago on the schedule of, hey, they play a lot of these guys that are trailing. So, you know, there's going to be some big series. You know, I'm not so sure they're not in a run right now. So I hope they pitch well. Tonight will be a tall order just because that place will be going crazy. But they seem like a different team. I mean, they, just like we said, if you go out and act like you're having a little bit of fun, you may have some. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's kind of where they are.
Yeah. You know, they have. They have that. And, you know, again, you're playing people, for the most part, a lot of them that have spent a lot of time in Memphis. You know, what was that? The game Wednesday night. And until Bud Norris came in, did he come in? I can't remember. You know, it was basically like the average age of the pitchers that pitched in Tuesday night.
Myers finished Wednesday.
Maybe, yeah, I guess it was Myers. So it was, that game was, the average age was like 21 and a half, 22, something like that. I mean, there were a lot of young pitchers because that was the one that Weaver started, and Ponce de Leon came in after that, and then it was, you know, what, Myers and Brebbia, and you know, I don't remember exactly who all, but Dakota Hudson, I think, pitched in that game. Gomber got his inning in that game. I mean, there were just all these young guys that are doing this, and, you know, it's probably cliche to say that the young guys have more energy, but for the part, they somewhat do. I mean, they're trying. I mean, one, it's all new to them. They're all excited about things, but they're also trying to make their impact. They're trying to, you know, let the manager know that I can do this, that this is where I need to be. And I'm not saying that, you know, the veterans are just a bunch of, you know, complacent guys, but, you know, you just can't keep up that energy, one, when you get older, as I'm continually finding out this week. But also, when you've got the job and you know what you're doing, it becomes more of a routine. It becomes more of a, I know what I need to do, and they're doing it. But when you're younger, you've just kind of, you're still figuring it out, and you've got that extra, you know, fire to figure it out. Now I don't know. I think that besides the fact that Mike Shildt is a guy that knows a lot of these young guys from his time in the minor leagues and obviously connects with young guys because he's, you know, he's done managing, he's done teaching, he's done coaching, things like that. It just feels like he's able to tap into some of that stuff, and they're out there playing hard, and it's a lot more fun to watch over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, this brand of baseball, it has greatly improved. the aspect of watching every night. It's, you know, that's a great scenario is yesterday the ninth. You know, there's it, that probably the risk taking does not happen under Matheny.
Mm-hmm. No. No, there's no way Bader steals second under Matheny, I don't think. Do we lose you again?
No. Okay. Yeah, that's, I heard that. Everything was
more of a point there, so that's why I didn't want to step on it. But you're right. I mean, we have seen, we've seen, more hit and runs probably in the last two or three weeks than we ever saw.
Oh, give me that a doubt. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, sometimes they don't work. I mean, that's going to happen with hit and runs. There are times where it doesn't work, but honestly, I'm thinking about it. I'm not thinking of too many that haven't. I mean, and I'm not saying that they've worked in the fact that, you know, gone first to third or whatever, but it doesn't feel like there's been a whole lot of, you know, strike them out, throw them out double plays because of a hit and run or if a guy's been, you know, doubled off because it was a hit and run. We hadn't seen a lot of that. Now some of that's just, you know, luck of the draw, but, it does feel like, you know, one, he's got good personnel and you know, having Harrison Bader up and other people, he seems to know when to do this. So that's the other thing. You know, it just felt like, you know, he knows to hit and run because Molina's up who doesn't strike out much and he could hit into a double play versus, oh, there's somebody on first and there's somebody hitting. Let's do a hit and run. And, you know, under Matheny, you couldn't always understand why he was doing something, but Schilt seems to have an idea of what his personnel are capable of.
Yeah, that could be benefit of seeing the guys, you know, seeing them grow up essentially. I think the management style is markedly different. You know, it's funny that we have the comparison deals. How many times was he in the back of the dugout thinking, man, I would have done it different? You know what I mean? I'd start the runner here. I mean, we all do it sitting at the house. You know, I always wonder how much it was said in the dugout.
I think there's probably a lot of that. I mean, that's just part of the deal. I mean, it's especially when, and I'm not saying that they were back there plotting
the. No. I didn't mean it like that either.
No, I know you don't. But. Yeah, I mean, that's just natural. I mean, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you would think, let's put it that way. I wouldn't guarantee it, but you would think that after the games, they'd say, hey, you know, Matheny, why didn't you hit and run here? You know, this is why I would have done that or something like that. Now we've heard that by the end of Matheny's tenure, he was kind of on this island where he wasn't listening to input and wasn't really discussing things. So maybe not by then, but at some point, you know, you'd like to think, the coaches get together and try to, you know, get on the same page. You know, because again, and I think, of course, that's somewhat the difference with Mike Schilt. We've seen that in the press conferences. He's perfectly willing to say, hey, this is why I did this. Maybe I should have done it this way, but this is what I was thinking at the time. And I don't think you can blame him. I mean, we don't make perfect decisions, you know, and sometimes things don't work out. But, you know, I'm sure the whole coaching staff, everybody was like, and sometimes they probably agreed with him or probably they may have gotten explanations that we didn't get. And so it's like, okay, sure. But there's always going to be this, well, why are we not doing this? Or why would I do this? You know, because you've got to manage along with that if you want to be a, you know, especially if you've been a manager or you want to be a manager.
Yeah. Very true. I mean, it's interesting to see it's so refreshing because it's new, but I think it's something that we just haven't seen much because any risk they take, he's willing to just put his neck on the line and he'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. And it's so refreshing. It's, you know, you're right. I mean, it seems like he was groomed to do it.
Yeah. I think this is, and we're seeing kind of why the Cardinals have been such Mike Schilt fans for quite some time. Working him up and wanting him to take over this spot or be in a position where he could take over this spot. And it's clicking now. Now, who knows if that's going to be enough to keep him the job going forward? I think it probably is, but, you know, and who knows if 4 or 5 years from now we're not complaining about stuff that he does. I'm sure, you know, who knows, but.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, right now, you know, it's really enjoyable to see these guys going. Now, let's get into probably the only, maybe not the only controversial, but one of the main controversial points of Mike Schilt's tenure is the fact that Dexter Fowler continues to play every day out in right field. You know, Schilt has told Fowler that he's going to play him. He wants to, you know, partly rebuild the trust that was there. That, you know, obviously everybody knows the relationship between Fowler and Matheny was a little iffy at best. And their communication wasn't good. And Matheny was, you know, kind of bouncing Fowler in and out of the lineup. And, you know, Fowler feels like he needs to play, which is fair. But, you know, you've got Harrison Bader, you've got Tyler O'Neill, and we've talked about how we want to see all those guys in the lineup. And we saw it yesterday, you know, they had all three of those guys. Well, you had Ozuna and Bader and O'Neill, and O'Neill makes a couple of great catches, and, you know, Bader, you know, they're both involved in the ninth, and all this energy and excitement, blah, blah, blah. I mean, let's also be fair, the Cardinals only scored one run until the ninth, so it's not like they were bringing a whole lot to the offense until it mattered, I guess. But mm-hmm. Where do you, and I know Ben Fredrickson wrote an article about this today, but how do you balance Fowler and his situation versus getting both of those guys in lineup?
Well, yeah, it's I was so glad that they put a little faith in him right when Schilt took the job, reached out to him, told him he was going to play him every day just to get him going a little bit. And there were things that Fowler did. He's not the electric defender that he used to be, and he's not as fast, but he's still a good base runner. Seems like he creates quite a bit on the base paths and everything when he's on. But yesterday was one of those to where you traded Pham to open a spot for these guys to play. And they come out and you see, you know, the two great plays in right. You see the ending, you know, that Bader's an integral part of. And you see the pinch hit where Fowler strikes out. It's one of those situations like you and I were talking about. He has the 1-0 count and swings wildly at the 1-0 pitch. Could have been 2-0, goes 1-1, ends up striking out, and it kind of changed the whole complexion of that at bat. I think we're seeing that a lot, and you hear the broadcast team that he's trying to hit his way out of it. Well, he was hitting well there for a little while, and I was glad. I was like, okay, I'm fine with this. Just, you know, keep playing him. I get it. It's the investment plays a big part of it, but I don't think that he's done as a player. But now you trade a guy away to play these two, and they almost give you the better option at this point just out of pure athleticism, which is painful to say because that's what they thought that Fowler would bring. So I don't know. It's going to be tough to keep plugging him in the lineup when you're not getting a lot of productivity out of it. And, you know, almost every night, we're into August now, every night's important. I don't know where it all ends or how it ends, but I would think that we're going to probably start seeing less playing time out of him now than we had for the first 10 to 12 games of the Schilt tenure. And it's going to be, I'm afraid it's going to get back into that cycle of, hey, I can't break out of this unless I hit more, to where he'll probably get the pinch hit nod every night. And we'll have to produce some way. I don't know. I don't think that we'll probably see that. I expect him to be in the lineup tonight, but I'm not positive that may be the case a week from now.
Yeah, I kind of did a little bit of, I tried to do a little bit of looking and comparing the Fowler again under Matheny this year versus Fowler versus under Schilt. And it's, you know, one, I'm not a statistician. That's Zach Gifford and all those guys. That's what they need to do. But, you know, I'm looking at it, and like you said, you know, one time I was looking at this, and he was hitting 200, and I don't remember what the other numbers were after Schilt. And he's like, well, that's not great, but that's like 25 points better than he was hitting under Matheny. Well, now it's, you know, here's the slash line under Matheny, 174, 270, 285. And it's under Schilt, it's 180, 288, 340. That's not a whole lot of difference. And granted, you're looking at 16, 17 games under Schilt. But he's getting basically half of a plate appearance more per game. Basically because he's playing all the time instead of not always sitting out. He's almost got the same amount of steals, which is just kind of showing what Schilt's running philosophy is there. He's walked more. I mean, he walks about once every you know, two games versus once every three games under Matheny. But I don't know. I mean, it's you look at, you know, kind of looked over at Fangraphs at his rolling average, and then I realized it's a lot of lines and stuff that I don't necessarily understand. But from what I gather from it,
and this,
you know,
is an accountant, ladies.
Yeah,
and
well, like, you know, it's some of the stuff I gather, but you know, yeah, advanced stats are never
sure.
My
I got you.
But it looks to me that yeah, he had a little bit of a spike in his hard hit percentage and like that, which is kind of what I was looking at to see if maybe he was doing a little bit better than he was under Matheny. But even that spike is not as much as he had earlier in the year, and it's tapered back off. Sure. I'm just not seeing that there's a consistently better results, not only in the stat line, but in how he's hitting the ball and things of that nature. You know, and he's still getting some bad luck. I mean, we looked at, it was what, a couple nights ago, they took I think he was struck out on a ball that was really a ball.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't getting the par call there, and you know, everybody gets that some, but you know, it just seems to be magnified when it's somebody like Fowler, who half the fan base wants to see, well, some of the fan base, I don't know, maybe I won't go as far as the half, some of the fan base wants to see, you know, kind of catch in and kind of validate this, you know, playing time, and a lot of the fan base is much more likely to want to move on. And those kind of things get magnified, and, you know, the kind of bad luck happens to him. I'm kind of like you. I think that I was definitely for them saying, okay, we're going to put a lineup out there, we're going to run with it, and we're going to see what it looks like for three, four, whatever weeks. Just, you know, not to have this idea that you had to produce every day to stay in the lineup for the next day. Not that, you know, things like that. I mean, that, you know, we're going to give this a real good run and get the results from it and see if, you know, a bigger sample, see if things happen. But right now, like I say, it's just very difficult right now to see that the extra playing time has happened to extra Fowler that much. You know, you're right. I expect him to be out there tonight. I expect him to be out there this weekend. But there is going to have to come a point, and I feel like it's pretty soon, that if you really feel like you're going to make a run this year, that you're going to have to tell him, look, we've given you some time. We'll still get you some at-bats, but these guys are going to play for the most part. Now, Tyler O'Neill and Harrison Bader have to produce as well. We've not seen Tyler O'Neill especially up here very much. And give him a few weeks and give him some starts and see how he goes. And, you know, if they're not hitting, then it's a lot easier to play Dexter Fowler too. But on the whole, I don't know. I feel like you probably within another week, you've got to start saying either the young guys get to play and Fowler has to just, we'll have to figure it out somewhere along the way, or you're not that serious about making the run.
Yeah, and that's tough to kind of tough to face.
Yeah.
I look back, and even the new will wear off essentially on Bader and O'Neill, and I think it kind of had started to with Bader a little bit. I mean, he was three strikeouts yesterday in big spots,
mm-hmm.
and then comes up with a big hit, and then you can see the benefit of having him by the steal of second there. So what, even in a slump, they're contributing a little bit more to where you think that well, he's not hitting, so Fowler's going to play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That goodwill, that's drying up pretty quick. So you're right. I mean, if they're going to keep running him out just to kind of to see, hey, we've got to validate this contract a little bit more, it is going to – I mean, it's going to kind of be a kick in the gut if he doesn't get going and he does keep playing. And that will be the first black mark that Shield will take.
Yeah, and, you know, again, you know, some people were talking about, this is not completely from Shield too. I mean, maybe a lot of it is, but you got to figure that some of that is from the front office, and they wanted to see some of these things. But you know, the front office may also direct them to play. But I feel like they're more. you know, when Mike Matheny was hired 6.5 years ago, we thought, okay, he's going to be this, you know, guy that just puts the front office plan into place. And it didn't really work out that way. I think Mike Shildt really is that guy. That he knows more about what they want, and they know his tendencies, and they're all willing to discuss this, and they're on the same page of what they want. And so I think that if Fowler's playing, it's either the front office wants him or they understand the plan behind it. And that's, I mean, I don't know what you know, what else you can do. It's a tough situation because you're right. I mean, Dexter's right. He can't get on a run if he doesn't play, but how much time do you give him to get on that run? And that's, I think that's where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those to where it seems like they're really fluid when he's playing well and he's in the middle of stuff and all the things that we talk about, all the intangibles that, you know, get argued. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you wonder when it turns into the name on the front of the jersey versus the name on the back argument. So I don't know. It's a tough spot. I keep refreshing, hoping that we'll see the lineup tonight. Like I said, I expect him in it, but you know, I just don't know when the line maybe have to be drawn pretty quick if you're still in the thick of things.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, if you can go in and win 2 out of 3 against Pittsburgh, you've got to start thinking that, you know, that there's something new about this team, that this team is starting to come together a little bit. I mean, you know, and I think you've talked about this, that Dan and others on the broadcast have said that this team never has had a run. Well, you know, you point out 5 of 7 now. That's a pretty good run. I mean, it's 5-2, and I mean, that's not great run. It's not like one of these, you know, 10-game winning streaks. But for this team, who was having problems winning back-to-back games for a long time, to win 5 of 7 is about as best as we've seen them. You know, they've cut a game off of the division lead. They're tied with Pittsburgh going into the series. So if you win 2 out of 3, I mean, obviously you're ahead of the Pirates. You've jumped ahead of them in the wild card race. And you may have gained a game somewhere along the way, especially as anybody else. I mean, you gained a couple of games on Colorado this weekend. You know, Arizona's still out there, and it's going to be tough. I don't think they don't have any more games with Arizona, do they?
No, yeah, they're done with Arizona.
But they got, you know, they got some more with Milwaukee. They have another 3 with Atlanta?
Yes.
Okay, I thought that's right.
Yep.
I mean, you've got some games left with these people, and but if you can win 2 out of 3 this weekend, I think you're a little bit more invested in this. You come out and you get flat or you get swept by Pittsburgh, then I don't think you worry about it as much. Because it's, you know, again, it's just tough to make up those kind of games. And it's to the point, you know, like we were saying before the show, you can go out and lose a really well-played game. You could go out and lose 2 or 3 in Pittsburgh, playing every one of those games very well, could have won every one of them, but that didn't matter. You know, I mean, if you lose 2 or 3, even as well as you're playing, it's still problematic to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's important every night. You know, you can't expect a sweep. We know that, but you do have to start stringing together some series wins, definitely.
Yeah. And again, it kind of feels like they can, the way they've played the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So. We will see. I'm trying to think. It feels like there's probably more that we should talk about this week, but I'm not remembering what it should be.
What's your opinion on Carlos Martinez?
That's the other part we should probably touch on. Carlos Martinez comes back, looks good for about 4 innings, velocity drops, kind of gets beaten around, taken out, and goes on the DL again because he's hurt. I've forgotten what he hurt this time. Because it's been shoulder and it's been oblique.
Yeah, shoulder strains. All that we were told.
That's what we're getting here. So you know, it's all kind of, it all feels kind of connected. Like he got hurt and then he's kind of compensated for that and gotten hurt somewhere else, then, you know, compensated for that and gotten hurt somewhere else. You know, it kind of goes against what we were just saying, to say that they're in this hunt and they can make some moves and all this kind of stuff, but it kind of starting to feel like you just shut down Carlos Martinez and just let him get healthy. Because it's, you know, it's hard to see that he can come back, and I know they're saying, what, a couple of starts, but, I mean, what are the odds that he's going to get hurt again when he comes back out there?
Well, and that's everything that's led up to this. I was glad to hear that it was mild, but you know, you go from oblique to lat to shoulder, and those are the best signs. And I think they did their tests. I think they did as much as they could because everybody was a little bit worried about it. I would give it, you know, a few weeks and then let him start throwing, if anything at all. I almost expected them to be shut down as is, you know, after he left the game. But doesn't seem like they're willing to do that. They must have a little more confidence than we do. But it's scary because I don't want to push it, then him be out all of next year. You know, then the pitching depth that we've heard about forever and that they've really held on to. They haven't really traded much of it away, which we thought they would have at this point. That will really be tested. I would love to be able to say that he could come back and be that guy that we saw the first four innings the other night, because, you know, you're going to be in this thing. You know, there's a good chance that you're going to be playing some meaningful baseball, and you'd love to have him back, but I don't know what the risk versus reward of not having Carlos at all for 2019.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dangerous thing there. You know, there was... They kind of go back a little bit to the trade down. It goes back to what we're seeing tonight. You know, there were a lot of people that thought the Cardinals should go get Chris Archer. A lot of people thought they were going to get Chris Archer. And part of the reason for that is to have a veteran arm in this rotation, because it's already kind of, you're starting to worry about innings.
Sure.
And who's going to cover this stuff. But if you had somebody like that, Pittsburgh gave up a lot for Chris Archer, so I don't know that I'm all that concerned that the Cardinals didn't get him. I'm sure they asked around and stuff like that, but if it's talking about O'Neill and Flaherty for Chris Archer, and then, you know, and plus maybe, I don't think anybody would be excited about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, and that's a move that I wanted to see made, just for A, the controllable years, and that they may have an innings crunch this year. But yeah, you're right. I mean, and all we've heard for 2 years now is that they're trying to develop that next bat because they just don't feel like that they've been able to. Well, O'Neill's power has shown that's gotta be, you know, he's knocking on the door. You know, I think it's, the jury's still out what he's gonna become, but it's tough to justify passing that up whenever you have a power shortage right now and your system lacks it, period.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's nobody else there. I think that you wouldn't want to trade Jack Flaherty anyway. But, you know. You know, if somebody could have taken, you know, Garcia, Adolis Garcia or something like that, you know, maybe. But, yeah, losing O'Neill at all, it's difficult until you know what you're going to get from him, because he is the biggest power thing that they have. And you're right, they haven't gone to develop it. If you know, when John Mozeliak said around the trading deadline, talking about maybe retreating a bit from free agency and trying to grow things, but that bat's not growing right now. I mean, there's nobody.
Yeah.
You know, Nolan Gorman looks really good, but Nolan Gorman is paid like, what?
And he 19.
Yeah, he's 19. He's played like, yeah, 30 something games at the lowest level there is. I mean, you know, he's not coming up in September or anything like that. You know, hopefully he's going to turn into that bat, and we'll see. But thinking that he's going to be that, is not the case. And again, there's something you can't really pin your hopes on one guy either. We saw that with Oscar Tavares, you know, because, yeah, there was Steven Piscotty, but he was always going to be, you know, the kind of the backup, you will, the, you know, the supplementary guy, the number two guy, the Matt Holliday to the Albert Pujols, of him being of Tavares. And, you know, obviously, unfortunately, that did not ever, we never got to see that. And it feels like the organization has kind of been scrambling since then, but, you know, I've always felt like, you know, you, if you can develop pitching, you can trade for hitting, and they haven't done that yet. I'm kind of surprised with all those pitchers that they've built up that they don't do more of trying to trade for some young guy, young prospect that they think they can develop. But I don't know. I mean, do you think that, you know, and it's a little early to talk about it, but, you know, there's some big bats in the free agency, and it, I don't think anybody necessarily expects them to be really serious contenders for Machado or Harper or anything like that, but it still feels like if they're going to have some sort of core bat, they're going to have to go out and get it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think there's holes in just about, you know, I don't know. Yeah, like I said, we don't get into the prospects a lot here, but I mean, some guys have done enough to where they there's nothing else they can prove in Memphis. You know, they've got to come up here. You got to see what they've got. And they may very well be great players, but I do think you do have to get that next chip. There's weaknesses. You know, Gorman being 19, he's, you know, several years away. Perez is the same thing, and some of the luster has gone off for Perez. So, yeah, you don't know. I think the Cardinals, and I think baseball in general, gets really starry eyed for prospects. And I think that that's always where things are built. And I know that, you have to have that, but I think you fall in love with them a little too much. This team, I think the Cardinals are really close. I mean, to being really good, but wouldn't you want to have that one definite sure thing bat? You know, that's the one thing. I think the Cardinals have a bunch of secondary guys, and I don't mean secondary players. They're stars, but not the superstar type. You know, this, that, the one guy. I mean, I could even say this. A Zobrist on the Cardinals would probably hit probably third and be one of your better hitters. They miss that lack of the guy that is just the sure thing. Mm-hmm. And I really wish they'd get it. And I would love to see them take a flyer on Donaldson now. You know, just to see. May not cost you much if he's healthy. I mean, the clock's going to start running on him. I think that he'll probably get put through waivers. They may not make it to St. Louis, but just something like that to where you can put in right now and have that everyday third baseman and bat in the lineup just to see how much it changes the complexion of the team. I was also, you know, kind of on the Hechavarria deal. And not that he's a superstar, but it's the fact that you could just change, the look at the ball club with a proven commodity. You know, I know that he's not the hitter, but he's a good shortstop. I know you're probably going to have too many moving parts to that, but what I'm trying to say is I think that they are going to have to complement this roster with somebody from outside of the roster. I don't know if, you know, trying to stay away from the free agent pool means that they're going to just completely build up, because next year could, 2019 could look a lot like 2018. Or if that means they're going to try to trade from a strength to a weakness. You know, I don't know, but I think that they need a player like that.
Yeah, and you're right. You look at this year, it would be interesting to see if they had a chance to get Donaldson, and if he, you know, I've never been a huge guy on Donaldson, but I could see that, you know, if he comes back from he's probably at a low point right now. So if you can get him for something cheap, and I don't know that you can. I mean, there could be a lot of people, like you said, the Indians have been interested in big bats, and there could be a lot of people that are interested. And so, he might not pass through waivers, or the Blue Jays might be able to ask for a little bit more if he does. But if you could get him for relatively nothing and let him play the last, you know, 6 weeks in St. Louis, month in St. Louis, and, you know, if nothing else, he gives you a leg up on getting to negotiate with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if he's got something, you know, his bat could be very helpful down the stretch. I don't expect the Cardinals would do that, because that just doesn't feel like their kind of thing to do. But, it would be very interesting to see them try something like that.
Sure. I mean, it'd be, I would like to see that. And then you just kind of look at the gaps where you know you could probably have an everyday player and, where you obviously could have a, you know, you could add a bat in the middle. Everybody could. But you're right. It doesn't seem like the kind of move that they would do to roll the dice on a guy that could still be injured. And some of the things that he does have injured are iffy. He's got a calf, which is, those are tough to diagnose and fix. And then, you know, he did have an ailing shoulder before he hurt his calf. So you really don't know, but you know what? I could see a situation where he comes in and has a Will Clark type finish. You know, not that he's, you know, has nothing to lose because he knows he's walking out the door anyway. But, you know, why not give it a shot if you're close? Yeah, it may cost them a roster spot, which they may not want to do. But in September, that's not going to matter anyway. So, you know, I don't know. Makes a lot of sense for us, but I'm sure they have their reasons not to.
Well, yeah. I mean, and again, just because they might try to, they may not have to. I mean, again, Donaldson has to pass their waivers or has to get to St. Louis's spot at least in the waivers before – you know, they can do anything. So if somebody in the American League claims him, the Cardinals have no chance. I mean, that's just the way it is. But if he clears waivers, and he might, because he's owed like $7 million for the next few weeks, you know, then you talk, maybe. I mean, the money's not an issue. Shouldn't be. You know, you can light $14 million on fire for Greg Holland. So,
well,
you
know. I wondered about that. I know that you and I were texting back and forth a little bit, but that was kind of where I was going with that one of the idea of sunk costs, which they're staring in the face with A. Holland, which is going to be official today, to Cecil, who's a big question mark. And then you have the Fowler situation. You just wonder how hesitant they are even for $7 million when we talk about that.
Yeah, and it's possible, but, you know, you're, again, sunk costs. That money's gone.
Yeah.
And if you can, if you're interested in Josh Donaldson at all, I think that it's probably worth taking on.
Sure.
And, you know,
yeah.
If you could trade a slightly better prospect and maybe Toronto eats $1 million or two of that. Who knows? You know, cut down a little bit, whatever. It's, if you're in a trade situation, if it's not a, you claimed him on waivers, so he's just gonna, we're just gonna let him go. If you actually do a trade, I mean, you could cut some of that, but, I don't know. I've never been just the biggest Donaldson fan, cause I've always, you know, he's a little bit older, he's had injury problems, things of that nature, but if they are interested in him, I would definitely be interested in seeing if they could get him cheap, what it would do, and then that, you know, hey, maybe they get you excited about signing him for the, or maybe you realize, hey, we don't want him around for 5 years or whatever that free agency is, because that, it feels like Donaldson is that level that they might play at.
I agree, and that's what I was looking at. You know, he will be 33 in December, and what is he going to want? Is he going to want a 3-4-5 year deal? 3 is pretty realistic for the Cardinals, especially with their window with Carpenter and Molina. So that makes a little bit of sense. But I don't know. I don't know if they're willing to pay that much for a 33 plus.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. And then you would have 3 33 plus in your lineup, and that's not counting Fowler. So, yeah. You know, you're young, but then you're old at several positions. So, you know, I don't know the threshold on that with teams. You know, it used to be past 32, no one would give a contract away. Mm. So, I don't know.
And I would bet Donaldson's going to look for a 5 year because you don't want to be getting out on the free agent market again when you're 36, 37. You know, I mean, go till 38 and figure this is really your last contract. And if you sign some 1 year deals later on, whatever. But,
I maybe, and you know what, I may be completely wrong about this, so that makes you a little nervous of that situation going forward, but, I felt like age was a sticking point with Turner, and he signed his deal at, you know, 31, going into 32, and I thought the age was one of the reasons that the Cardinals didn't take a flyer on him.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, but you know, again, if you want younger play, I mean, you could go get Bryce Harper, but it's going to cost you a whole lot, even in a down year. Now, you know, Derek Gould's floated it out there that somebody told him at the All-Star break, he wondered if Harper's down season is going to bring him into play for people like St. Louis. I don't know. I mean, part of me would like to think that they've been kind of looking toward this offseason for a while, that they've been, you know, we've talked about them not spending a whole lot of money or not spending up to the level that they could. And, you know, Wainwright's contract comes off the books and you've got all this young pitcher you could afford, blah, 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 blah. But boy, I mean, especially like you said, after seeing Fowler and the problems they're having there, if you look at Cecil, then you look at the guys they missed. You look at David Price, and they're like, man, we're glad we didn't do that. And you look at Albert Pujols, who, you know, is putting up, you know, is still putting up some decent numbers, but, you know, what he would have been in St. Louis is iffy. And, of course, they kind of knew that, I think, when they made that. That was a different story. But, and then in Jason Hayward, who, you know what, this is his, what, third year in Chicago, and he's finally hitting a little bit. You know, they look at all those. They may be very hesitant, but, you know, on the other side of that, though, Machado and Harper are young and completely different from the guys that they that all these other guys.
Sure. I mean, that's – yeah, you're looking at superstars. I mean, that's – yeah, Hayward has lived his whole career of trying to – someday he'll hit. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. That's so I agree with you. I mean, if this level this year is going to be is pretty substantial.
Yeah, and I, you know, I can make the argument if I wanted to. I don't think anybody believed me, but I can make the argument that the Cardinals could be involved with those guys. But
sure,
and I, you know, I think they ask, I think they talk, and I think there's been some discussions about that, but. You know, again, it's one of those things you're probably going to have to overpay to get a guy like mm-hmm. that. And I don't know that they want to do that. Of course, they could just trade for Nolan Arenado, right? That could be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, you're talking about a superstar. So, there's going to be talent out there. And the one thing is, too, is there's going to be talent at spots where they need it.
Yeah.
And that's one of those to where you – yeah, it could be interesting. I wonder about this, and it me being a fanboy on this is maybe some of the reason that are we overlooking the fact that Munoz may be their third baseman next year?
I mean, he could be. I don't know that they want him to play every day like that, but maybe. I mean, he's definitely developed well. I think they would like him to. I imagine he'd be more likely to take over the Greg Garcia role.
Yeah.
I think Garcia is getting to. Is he getting to arbitration eligible or something like? He's getting to that point where they could just, you know, non-tender him if they wanted to, and then let Munoz fill in as the shortstop, third base, second base guy.
Yeah, he's eligible this year. So, and I wondered about that. You know, out of options, I think a lot of people. Would like to see Garcia DFA today for Wong. I just don't see it because I think that Gary Garcia is a big presence in that clubhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true. And the Cardinals just don't – they don't cut people without a really good reason. And Garcia's done what you expect out of Greg Garcia this year.
I completely agree with that. He does his role well. You know, I cannot argue that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think if he was just, you know, hitting 120 and, you know, just dragging the team down, then maybe. But, you know, he's contributed when he's been asked to. He's a guy that
started the rally. Yeah.
Didn't have to. Didn't have to play every day, but he's just a reliable guy. And again, he's not the guy you want to play a lot for. So when it comes to next year, and you know he's this year at the end of the year, and he's arbitration eligible, he could be a guy that's non-tendered. But I don't see them cutting him in the middle of the year because of you have to be Greg Holland, you have to be Jonathan Broxton, you have to be Johnny Peralta, you have to be somebody that's really not living up to expectations before they're going to cut you in the middle of the year.
Very true. And I mean, he really, multiple positions, he's a, throws up a good at bat as a pinch hitter. I mean, that's, you know, basically a veteran in that clubhouse now. So the, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think he does his job well. It's, you know, yesterday we were talking about that when Wong was coming back that, they were like, hey, the easy answer could just be to DFA Garcia. And I was like, I don't think the Cardinals look at him like that. I mean, I think that he's a pretty big clubhouse presence.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, again, hitting 236 on the year, which is be his really his career low, but 688 OPS, he's actually got three homers, which is a tied for a career high. You know, he's just that guy, the guy you can plug in, and he's he's nothing special, but there's no particular reason to let him go right now. Because as soon as you let him go, you know, Wong comes back and gets hurt again, and then what do you do? I mean,
sure. Well, you know, another way you can look at it, if, you know, there's probably better players on that roster, but I can guarantee you he would be on a playoff roster.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean by that? I mean, you may not, you may think you're not taking your best 25 guys, but he would be on a playoff roster just because of all the things that we say. The versatility, the good base running, and the defensive versatility, the good base running, and he throws up a good and bad, a good pinch hitter.
Yeah, definitely so. So yeah, I don't see that happening. And it is, you know, it's, we're recording this, it's about 2:15 in the afternoon, and they still haven't, they haven't released that yet, which is a little bit surprising.
I completely agree. I figured, especially with it being the East Coast game time tonight, that it would be around noon one. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, Jeff Jones had made it sound like, you know, Wong wasn't a definite move. You know, it may be more toward the weekend. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe something to watch. Definitely that, something to watch.
Yeah, that very well may be that they're not going to do it today, and it'll be tomorrow or something to go. Notice that on Twitter just came out a few minutes ago that Tommy Pham has a fractured foot. to continue his, I noticed he was 0-for-5, that he only had 2 at bats in his last game, but I guess, and he'd been hit. He'd been hitting each game.
Well, and he actually hurt his, you know, he'd hurt his foot before that, and then actually hurt it and irritated it more on a slide at the plate, and that's when they pulled him out. that probably played a factor. Not necessarily that he went hurt, but he does have injury history.
Yeah. And, you know, he has been kind of fortunate not to have a lot of those. You know, last year he wasn't hurt at all, I don't think. This year he hadn't really been hurt. I don't think he'd been on the DL. I mean, you could argue the eye problems, you argue, you know, things like that, but he hadn't been on the DL the last couple of years. And given Tommy Pham's history, it was about time for that, I guess. So maybe the Cardinals did sell high. I think that's going to be the thing to watch. I mean, you know, there was an idea that Tommy Pham would just tear it up the rest of the year because he has a chip on his shoulder, and Tommy Pham plays better when he's angry. I think everybody agrees with that. But there's also the idea to watch that, you know, he may never be anything going forward, too. You know, the Cardinals may, you know, we were talking about the Cardinals should have sold on him last offseason and that they kind of maybe had a low price on him now. But, you know, it's possible that nothing ever clicks for him again. And, you know, he's 30, right? I mean, we were talking about it just a minute ago with those older players. You know, you just don't know where that cliff is going to be. I don't necessarily think that. I think that there's probably a good 2 or 3 or 4 years for Tommy Pham still left. But, I don't know, I think he's going to be a very interesting player to watch and see how he does outside of St. Louis. I'm just not sure that the Cardinals are going to regret this trade.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I mean, that's he's right up against making money. And they're probably banking that he had his career year last year.
Yep. So, all right. Well, we've probably covered everything now. Had to stretch it out to an hour at least. So
yeah. Well, and we're trying to break some news, and it just doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Just not going to help us out there. So odds are, my guess is that that's going to happen. Either Saturday or Sunday. I don't know what the pitching matchups are. If there's a matchup that favors Wong or something, they'll wait on. But I think he wasn't he at like Peoria like one day recently?
Yeah, it was in last night.
Yeah, so may just be that they decided not to rush it and they'll do it tomorrow. I don't know.
Maybe so.
We will see. See if John Brebbia pitches 3 innings tonight, then we'll know.
Yeah, that's something to watch as well.
Yeah, so. All right. Well, Alan and I will be back with you next weekend after the Cardinals. Let's see. They've got Pittsburgh this week, and then they'll have Miami in Miami Monday through Wednesday, and then they'll start a Royals series next weekend. So.
Rivalry series next week, so I get a little nervous about that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, it's the first year in a while they haven't done that, you know, 2-2 series where they play two in Kansas City and come to Cross, play two in St. Louis, whatever. They spread it out because they played them. Well, they played them way back, didn't they? It was like May or something that they played them, didn't wasn't it?
Yeah, it is early.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, May 21 through 23, yep. And lost 2-3 there. So yeah, I mean those are, and even though Kansas City's lost, you know, traded a lot of players off. You'd like to think you could win that, but you can't look to that yet. I mean, you got Miami, who has played the Cardinals tougher than they should have, even though they've lost some players now.
I always worry about a team on a three-city trip, and especially when it to come in after a three-city trip and it be the rival in state. You know, I worry about that Royal Series a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. At least there's a day off before it, and that helps.
Well, Munoz is playing second base tonight, that probably answers our question.
Answers that one completely. So, all right. Well, like I said, we'll be back at you next week. We'll talk about what happened, and it'll be a lot less activity, most likely. Hopefully, I'd hate to think that there's going to be a lot more activity after the trade deadline, but I guess you never know. But until then, that's Alan, and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!